Hello and welcome to The Last Wicket, a cricket podcast where we discuss innovative ideas, innovative solutions for cricket, which I don't know. Sometimes you can think of it as cynical because we can say that this is all just an exercise in futility, but we're going to be hopeful. We're going to think of some ideas, especially given the topic that we're going to discuss today. But first, I'm joined by my co-host Mayank and a special guest. We have Aryan Sarana on the call. He is a feature writer with Guerrilla Cricket. He also has his own cricket podcast, Cricket Beyond Borders. So, Aryan, welcome to The Last Wicket.
Thank you so much, guys, for having me. Really a pleasure to be here.
And we appreciate you for making time. And it's funny because before we started recording, I asked you if you're familiar with the podcast because most people that we have on are not always listeners. So I'm glad that we have someone who actually listens to this podcast a bit, given that we are not as regular as we would like. So no, we appreciate you, appreciate your time today. And for our listeners, I mean, if you have seen the podcast episode description already, you know that we are going to be talking about something that's been a hot topic for a while, especially given how cricket has evolved in recent years with all the different formats, with all the different competitions, and so on. But how it has affected international cricket is something that's been a raging debate. And we really want to talk about what ails, the structure or the schedule of the international tours and what can we do about it? And again, these are just ideas, these are just solutions, proposed solutions, and we'll get into all of it. But before that, Aryan, I just wanted to quickly get your thoughts on, obviously, when the IPL is going on, it seems like everything else stops. I mean, there's still international cricket going on. Pakistan is taking on New Zealand in a T20 series. There's women's cricket happening. Associate cricket is going on, but it seems like the world of cricket just stops for IPL and everything that's happening around it. And obviously this season is just been kind of been taken over by what I can only call batsmanship has gone crazy. At the start of this tournament when SRH scored like two. Actually, they have scored two scores of over 270, right? And when they first did it, it was like, oh my God, this is amazing. This is incredible batting. And now, given the amount of 250 plus scores, it doesn't feel as special anymore. And all of this in just a few weeks. So I'm just curious to hear your thoughts on the IPL season as it is right now, but also just the evolution of T20 batting, I guess.
Yeah, as you rightly mentioned, the scores have been towering this season. And I think it all boils down to the impact player rule because last season also it was there, but teams weren't really catching up to it. And after a season went by, teams caught up on the trend and optimized the use. So, as you pointed out, we've seen a lot of totals above 250. And Bhuvneshwar Kumar said the other day that the SRH batters are spoiling us, and someday if they score 200, we'll be found wanting. So, I mean, the jury is out on the impact player rule because Rohit Sharma has come out and openly criticized it that it's doing a couple of things. A is taking the all-rounders out of the game. Someone like Shivam Dubey, Washington Sundar, they have been confined to one skill set. So it hurts the all-round development of Indian cricketers in the longer run. And secondly, what's also happening is that you are not penalizing the leadership group for the mistakes they make in reading the conditions, because now you have a shield and getaway where you can just swap a player and get away with the misjudgments that you made before the toss happens. So, I mean, even though BCCI trialed it out during Syed Mushtaq and they've gone ahead with the rule, I don't know if this is going to be persisted with because it drastically alters the balance between bat and ball.
No, and I agree because it's not just Rohit Sharma. There have been quite a few people, influential people. Not just players, but also like coaches who have expressed their kind of honestly disappointment, but just dissatisfaction with how much the quote unquote impact of the impacts of has played a role. And you're right, I am a long time CSK fan, and I've seen both the highs and lows of CSK. But one thing that used to really frustrate me in past seasons was the CSK batting always seemed to start slow, and then they would always bank on finishing strong. And then in the last couple of years, obviously led by Shivam Dubey, but then Ajinkya Rahane has also gotten into the act, and the batting has improved for CSK. Their rate has gone up. It's quite an indictment of the state of IPL batting now that doesn't really excite me anymore. Because it's we you know when something is rare, it makes it special, right? But when it happens every day, and that even for CSK, even watching CSK bat, it doesn't give me the thrill anymore. And as a longtime CSK fan, that's a little sad. And I am totally for them phasing out the impact sub rule. But I think the organizers will be in a bind because, as far as eyeballs, people want to see in T20 cricket, people want to see the big hits, people want to see teams scoring the fours and the sixes like every ball. Nobody really wants like a hard fought, like a low scoring thriller. I feel maybe for the purists, they enjoy that contest, that
Yeah,
even contest.
true.
But in when you have like children watching or like older people watching, they just want to watch it for fun, and they don't want to bother with the intricacies of bat versus ball. So I think they're in a bind. I don't know if the organizers will be all for phasing it out, even though bowlers absolutely hate this rule. But it is just a state of what it is. But I think that leads quite nicely into our topic, because I think not just given the amount of 200 plus totals and all these batting friendly tracks, because of the monotonous nature almost, because every game kind of seems to blend into the other. Like you watch one game where both teams are scoring 200, 200, 250 plus, and you're like, didn't I see this game already like last week? So that's where something like international cricket and its own pace, and not just T20, but test matches and ODIs, they all have something for everyone. For each cricket fan, they get to pick and choose what they have. Now, obviously, we're in a kind of a bind because, like I said, when the IPL is on, everything else takes a back seat. And for people who are not into T20s or IPL, it's just kind of like a it's almost like a break from the actual cricket, or cricket as they consider it to be. So we're going to talk about some of those challenges, and I know Mayank has some questions and topics for discussion, but Mayank, why don't you lead us off?
Absolutely. No, it's really interesting. The IPL topic that you talked about, and it made me almost feel like it's getting repetitive, not just because, now there's an impact player, but the other aspect we've noticed this season is a lot of the pitches which were slower in nature are now just flat. So,
Right.
no matter where you're playing, it's to your point, the same game that's being played. Bat first, try to score as many as possible. If you're chasing, you're always in the game. So it does make you feel like, there's too much cricket going on or too much of the same type of cricket going on. And that along with, I'd recently just browsing some stats, and I came across the fact that Rabada, who's such a phenomenal test bowler, has played just 60 tests, even though he's been around, nearly 9 years. So those two factors together made me think of the fact that, well, one, there is too much of certain cricket, and two, there are other scenarios where there's not enough cricket. So I'll start off with, just the structure that today we have in world cricket, and maybe get your thoughts there. And the first thought that came to mind is countries such as New Zealand and South Africa. They're today producing really good talents, and I know, there have been in recent times complaints about the quality of South African cricket not being great and all of that, but let's face it, there's some phenomenal talent there, even when they went to New Zealand with a half-baked side because of the SA20. There were some really good performances. So with that said, What are you just, I guess I'll kick it off by asking what are your general thoughts are in on the structure today that ICC follows? And I know it's more or less, you know, determined by the big three, but how that's managed today and how, from an exposure perspective, what the lesser known teams are getting.
Yeah, I think this time around they've obviously increased the number of games in the FTP as compared to the previous cycle, 2019-23. The number of games have increased from 694 to 777, and there has been an emphasis on giving teams who are at the lower rung of the ladder, like Bangladesh, West Indies. You know, Jason Holder complained that they are not playing enough tests. So there has been a focus on providing ample opportunities at the test level. And obviously, the economic factor does come into play because we've seen how South Africa have just met the bare minimum requirement by slotting just two game series and not going over that. So this time around, the FTP is usually dictated by how boards are trying to, you know, crop up the franchises along with the international calendar. And another talking point that I observed was actually in line with what you wrote in your blog, Mayank, about there being consistency in preparation, because England played around 88 ODIs when they went on to win the championship in 2019. And in the next cycle, they played only 44 ODIs. And the results were there for everyone to see in India at the marquee event. So India similarly are going to play just 42 ODIs, which is drastically less from what they did to, you know, finish runners up at their home. So I'm just afraid whether the consistency in prep will be affected, which was a very good point that you mentioned in your blog. So yeah, obviously a lot of interesting points to discuss on. And just harking back to the discussion we were having about IPL, I mean, both of you would be with me that we absolutely love as purists the low scoring thrillers that happen at the Ekana Stadium in Lucknow. I mean, sure, you love 250 plus games at Chinnaswamy and Eden Gardens, but when LSG and RCB play and they win the game by 4 runs after scoring 126 odd, it's a different kind of thrill, right?
Oh, I couldn't
Absolutely.
agree.
I also wonder if it's a generational thing, right? Like, because we all grew up watching cricket in the 90s and 2000s when, you know, there was always some contest between bat and ball. And even like the late 2000s and probably even the 2010s, we've talked about this in another podcast episode where it's actually got harder for batters, right? Because of the increasing quality of the bowlers. I'm talking about that at the international level. Increasing quality of the bowlers, but also challenging pitches. And so what that's led to is more even contests between all these sides. But then when you take in competition, when you take a competition and make it stacked in favor of the batters, suddenly it's just about batters versus batters, not like batsmen and bowlers versus batsmen and bowlers. It's just like who outbats the other team, right? And I wonder how much of it is generational because, you know, we grew up watching more even contests, but whereas, let's say the kids, quote unquote, these days, who have grown up on a diet of IPL cricket and then the occasional international cricket, they're used to seeing all these like batathons, essentially, you know, teams trying to outmuscle each other. And so they are the ones who probably will not enjoy the low scoring. Like whenever I take a peek at social media comments, if a batter just takes three deliveries to take like two singles and maybe like two runs, immediately there's like, oh, this person is he's slowing down the momentum. The team run rate is like 12. This is like the 13th over, maybe. And they are like, you know, like for example, let's just take today's game, for instance. I was following it earlier. Well, people who are listening, this is KKR versus the Punjab Kings against Sunil Narayan. Phil Salt gave a flying start. They were going at 13 runs per over. Venkatesh Iyer came in. He scored a four, I think, in the second ball. But then there was a period where he was taking the singles and the doubles. And the social media comments, you know, it would make you think he was scoring like 10 of 25 deliveries. even though he was going at a really good rate. And that's how our minds, because of watching all these big 250 plus totals, our brain now is just getting rewired to think this is the way every innings should go, every batter should go. There's no nuance now. There, nobody appreciates a good bowling spell or a bowler trying to get two or three dot balls. If a bowler bowls well, people talk more about, oh, the batsman sucks. He doesn't know how to hit. He's stalling momentum. Nobody gives credit to the bowler for actually keeping the batters in control. So I just feel it's just the way that cricket has evolved, that the newer generation of cricket fans and followers are just not appreciative enough of a good contest. It's always about this person is not batting fast enough. It's just become very, you know, black and white.
Yeah. The one point I'll make on the IPL before we go back to our topic is one of my favorite seasons, to your points, was the second season of IPL. And part of the reason was it was in South Africa. The pitches had a little bit of juice in them. So you suddenly saw a lot of 150, 160 scores where there would be early wickets that would fall, then they would consolidate, then they would hit. Again, obviously a different era. We did not have T20 hitters like we do today. So not to say that, you know, if we have a similar IPL in South Africa next year with similar type of talent, similar names and all of that, we wouldn't see the same results. But that was just great to watch because a lot of these games were, you know, very close. No game would be, you know, a blowout for that matter, because once a team scores 250, no matter who's in the opposition, even if SRH is chasing that, you know, it's going to be really, really uphill. Like everything has to go right to pull that off. So yeah, that's just something that comes to mind as we're speaking on it. But coming back to our other topic, I think the key, the one other piece that, you know, comes to mind as we think of the schedule today is, you know, we've talked about the lack of balance, you know, certain countries getting more cricket, certain countries not getting as much, the economics coming into play and all of that. But the other piece that also is a little bit disappointing is some of the good initiatives that the ICC has, such as the Intercontinental Cup, which was really a pathway for associate teams to improve their, you know, multi-day cricket, play 3-day, 4-day cricket, compete with each other. That's no longer there. So it's almost as if ICC has deliberately said, yeah, we're good with, you know, these 12 teams. And by the way, even among those 12 teams, really 8 play test cricket at a regular basis. And then Ireland, Afghanistan, Zimbabwe, they'll get their odd test here and there, but they won't really play, you know, a sizable number. That's definitely something. And of course, there's economics to it. There's issues such as, you know, just from a scheduling perspective, where to schedule it, all of that. But that definitely is a step backward in my mind. And I guess wanted to get your thoughts on that. And I feel like the ODI Super League, at least from a limited overs perspective, is trying to overcome some of those things. But yeah, just opening the floor for your thoughts.
Yeah, I agree 100%, Mayank, because the chief advantage of playing Intercontinental Cup for the associate teams was that they were getting opportunities outside of the unforgiving nature of ICC's limited overs events, because the World Cricket League and World Cup qualifiers were promotion, relegation, World Cup qualification, and ODI status, funding, something or the other was always at stake. So to just play in an environment where the stakes are low and you're just getting exposure and opportunities to compete against teams who are placed at the same level as you, it made a world of difference to how a team evolves and grows. And it's in line with some of the suggestions that have come from the pundits. For example, Brad Hogg, upon agreeing to Rohit Sharma that the WTC final should be a 3-game event, he went on to add that you could break down the WTC structure into divisions where you have 4 teams in one division, 4 teams in another division. And the third tier could be for the associate teams who could make their way up. So obviously there should be a bit more emphasis given how the associate teams can make the step up. And I think one of the key ingredients that could be used in this process is playing a lot of A games. So, for example, Afghanistan team is playing India's A team. India's A team, obviously captained by Abhimanyu Iswaran, you know, all the players who can readily make that switch to international level, if they indulge with Afghanistan's full strength squad, it's going to be very helpful in their progress and development, I feel.
That's a great point. Yeah, I do know that there have been initiatives like those that have happened, not just, you know, India, Afghanistan for that matter. Obviously, Pakistan was also instrumental in helping Afghanistan cricket develop over the years. But, you know, there's capacity for, let's say, a Namibia getting help from South Africa, or a PNG getting help from, you know, Australia or New Zealand, their neighbors. So, yeah, that's definitely a great point. And the other piece that, you know, comes to mind is, just from a balance perspective, you know, we talked about, yeah, this is, you know, franchise cricket, as much as sometimes we get bored and IPL is getting repetitive. It's very hard to say that this is not a good thing for cricket, because the truth is, you know, 20 years ago, if you were in the top 15 cricketers of the country, you had a career, you had a livelihood, and pretty much everybody else was, you know, suffering. They were just getting by. They were, Ranji cricketers were not paid as well, for example. And that's true for most domestic cricketers, I would say, with the exception of the big three again, who have a little more money to put in the hands of their domestic cricketers. Those cricketers are now getting chances in these leagues. But one of the interesting pieces of that is, even there, the chances that people are getting are more restricted to the same, the top six, seven, eight nations of the world. So somebody like, you know, Bermuda's Leverlock, who's been the captain for Bermuda, who's had a number of good performances in associate level, he's never got a chance to perform even at the CPL. You know, so it's just one of those things where franchise cricket, and maybe it's because of, you know, one, the corporate nature of it, but there's got to be other reasons why, you know, they haven't tapped the associate market as well, or the lesser known teams. So that's something that's worth exploring, and there's potentially, like, you know, rules or something that can be thought about for that.
Mike, you're talking about something very idealistic, right? Giving opportunities to all these players. I think the challenge is that, especially in franchise tournaments, right? All these team owners, TV broadcasters, let's just look at it from actually the broadcaster's angle first. They need people to watch their competition, especially mm-hmm. given the amount of T20 franchises today, franchise cricket today. You know, there's so many T20 competitions that I can't keep track of. First of all, where they're playing, I don't even know which country this competition is taking place in. And then I see the same names pop up every month in a different competition. So it all kind of blends into one, and it gets to a point where you don't even know which players with which team, because they could be playing for two different teams in the course of 2 or 3 months. And so it becomes a challenge for broadcasters to attract people to say, hey, watch this T20 competition. It's different from the IPLs and the PSLs, the BBLs, all of that. So they need big names. They need these bigger players, and they splurge money on them. If they include cricketers from associate countries, or, you know, lesser known players, even though ideally, from a cricketing perspective, this is a great opportunity, not just for the players, but it can also cause popularity to surge in their countries. You know, if people from those countries, fans from those countries watch this competition thinking, oh, our cricketer from our country is playing here, that leads to a surge in viewership. But broadcasters don't think that way. For them, it's more about the number of viewers, it's not the money that's coming in. So they all go for the same players, you know, unfairly, they are termed quote unquote mercenary cricketers, right? Because the cricketers will play literally 10 months in a year in different competitions. They will appear in every single tournament, and they're almost like bankable cricketers, right? And I think that's what the challenge is, to get these associate players. And I think team owners try to do that, you know, in the IPL too. You've seen, you know, the occasional cricketer from an associate country playing. But at the end of the day, it's the bottom line is money and viewership. And I think that's where that tug of war between giving exposure to sociopaths, but also we need viewers and we need more money. And I think that's
I get that. I the way I would challenge that in two fronts. So my first thought is, if you remember when the IPL started, and I don't believe that rule's around anymore, but when it started, there was a rule around having at least, was it two or maybe three under 19 players, right? So you had to have them in the squad.
Right, yeah.
You did not have to play them every game. That was absolutely not the rule. But you had one of those emerging stars of the tournament rule play, awards as well, which I think is still there.
I think it's still there, yeah.
Yep, which I think is still there. But there's not as much of an emphasis on, you know, making sure every team has, let's say, three under 19 stars. They invariably end up buying them because there's such great talent out there that they invariably sign it up. But what's stopping BCCI from putting a similar rule to say, let's have two players from associate nations? Now, again, I don't expect them to start replacing, you know, the Australians or the South Africans or the West Indies in the playing 11 consistently. But the other day I was watching a Delhi game and, you know, Hope was batting, the West Indian batter, Hope was playing for Delhi. And I was thinking there's got to be somebody better. I mean, no disrespect to Hope, and he's obviously a fantastic one-day player, but he's not really a T20 batter. And here we have him in the so-called premium tournament of the world, taking a spot. There's, you know, somebody like, forget anybody else, but Sikandar Raza, who's gotten a IPL contract in the past, would be such a better replacement in place of him. So I guess my point there is just having them around is also critical, because to your point, one, that might help interest in, increase in cricket if, you know, they see their local names participate in an international league. But at the same time, it also helps, you know, let's say somebody plays for 5 years for the Mumbai Indians and gets only 10 games. But just being part of that setup, being part of that professional setup, they get an exposure which they can take back and help set up in their home country. I mean, the one of the best things that I you know, read in John Wright's autobiography long back was the fact that he had exposure to Rahul Dravid in Rahul Dravid's English cricket stint, and that's how the two connected, and that's how he ended up becoming an Indian cricket coach. That's how they, you know, Dravid felt very comfortable saying, yep, his methods, his professionalism is what Indian cricket needs. And, you know, he convinced the required stakeholders, Sourav Ganguly, others, to bring somebody like that on board. And obviously not saying that just that one coach transformed everything for Indian cricket, but it was a step, a major step in the right direction. And that's where I feel like, to your point, there needs to be a more longer term view. Right. I totally understand the broadcasters are trying to look at numbers for this year, not for 5 years down the line. But if that there's that longer term view, then you have a chance of actually building, growing the game. And it'll be slow. By no means do I expect, you know, 16 amazing teams playing test cricket in 2030. I don't think that's realistic. But the fact is, at least there'll be a chance of more exposure, more growth, more chances. And it's just not like Sikandar Raza and maybe Andy Flower are the only two Zimbabwean names that we know of in the IPL.
So let me ask this question to Ari, and I'm curious to hear your thoughts, because I think me and Mike, we have talked about this before too. But whose responsibility is it to improve the growth of the game or exposure of players from countries like the associate nations, or even like the lesser, not as major test playing countries? Whose responsibility is it to grow the game and to give these players the exposure they need? Because, you know, on the surface, you would say ICC, obviously. But when it comes to the surge of all these domestic competitions everywhere, the ICC can't control everything. They can force countries to include all these players, but they can do some things of their own as far as, you know, giving opportunities for these teams to play more. So I'm curious to hear, what is your take on the responsibility part, and is enough being done right now to improve it?
Yeah, so guys, firstly, on a lighter note, Gujarat Titans is one of the teams that could be an anomaly in this regard, because their overseas quartet is reserved for Afghanistan players.
I agree. Yesterday, there were like three three players in the same 11. So
coming to the greater good of the game, I think the current FTP is a big win in that respect, as I previously mentioned, because teams like Bangladesh have been given a whopping number of international cricket. And Afghanistan is a special mention in that regard, because since their test debut in 2018 in India, they played just six tests. And this time they've got 21 scheduled. So it's a big step up. And it remains to be seen how many of them actually go through, because we've seen that Australia withdraw at the last moment and disrupt the plans. But for starters, it's a big win that at least they have a set number of matches, which is almost triple the number they were initially playing. And I would equate the BCCI's role to corporate social responsibility, because the ICC obviously can do so much, but BCCI coming to the Afghanistan Cricket Board's rescue by providing them stadiums in Dehradun, Lucknow, and the new stadium that's being built in Noida as well. So it obviously extends opportunities, and a lot of Indian international coaches have actually extended their services to Afghanistan, and we've also been providing training facilities. So apart from the ICC, it's definitely down to the cricket boards to, you know, lend a helping hand to the boards that are trying to climb up the ladder. And there is also a need for a minimum wage to be introduced, as Jason Holder said, because you are seeing that players are actually making an exodus to coal pack deals in the case of South Africa. So Jason Holder proposed a minimum wage plan, and BCCI has also been following it domestically now that they are tending to increase the price bracket from 25 lakhs to 75 lakhs in one CR, that the domestic cricketers earn at least that much, so that it incentivizes test cricket. Because, you know, for these smaller cricketing nations, it is very lucrative to fall into the trap of franchise leagues. So it would be great if the test cricket and the multi-format international cricket has some reward for them. So I think that's another aspect. If that is ticked, there'll be a lot of less exodus to franchise cricket, which is happening a lot these days.
Benny, to answer your question, I'll quote the movie Spider-Man, or the franchise Spider-Man: with great responsibility, with great power comes great responsibility. but jokes apart, I mean, I do think that, you know, one of the pieces that keeps getting lost is, you know, in the 90s, for example, the English Cricket Board and Cricket Australia, or ACB as it was called back then, were the two powerful boards. You know, they would rule the roost. They would dictate how things go. You know, I think growing up, we all saw cases where match referees would be a little more lenient towards them as compared to, you know, their Asian counterparts, things like that. Obviously, times have changed. Now India is ruling the roost. And I think there's this whole mindset around, well, yeah, you had your time, now is ours. And I think that's, again, in my mind, very short-term thinking, where I don't think there's like a thought process of, yeah, what can be done from, you know, from a longer term perspective, from for the good of the game and all of that. So that's where the whole gap of responsibility lies. Everybody's watching their own interests, and nobody's really saying, yeah, but, you know, doing this, like, let's say to Aryan's example, skipping the series with Afghanistan, what is the consequence that, you know, these teams are facing? So there's got to be rules also around such instances. You know, maybe have a pretty solid fine. And for all you know, somebody like Australia or India or England, they probably can afford that fine. But nonetheless, that money should still go to that host team, which was supposed to earn that revenue, earn that money, and you know, improve their grassroots cricket and use that to improve their grassroots cricket. So those sort of rules need to be there, and that's where I feel like the ICC needs to have some sort of backbone. Like, at the end of the day, we can't just let you know, the money show where the cricket goes. But I do want to switch topics a little bit and talk about, like, structural changes, because I think that's where you know, obviously we've talked about, yeah, there needs to be somebody who's looking out for the greater good of the game and all of that. And I get, like, you know, this is very, very idealistic. And I love the fact that Aryan mentioned corporate social responsibility, because it does feel exactly like that. You know, at the end of the day, corporates always think about the bottom line and their profit and loss and all of that, when there should definitely be an aspect of that social responsibility. Even more so when you're, you know, running a sport. But I guess the other aspect is, what are the structural changes that we can, you know, bring on? And obviously this is just three guys, three cricket nerds, you know, ideating. So not like it's going to lead it to anything, but just what are the changes that we can bring on to make this more easy without, you know, hampering the economics of it? So I'll ask that question to you, Aryan. And I think you already touched on one idea by Brad Hogg, which was super interesting, but over to you.
Yeah, so as I mentioned, I saw merit in what Brad Hogg preached, because having just a set of teams, maybe two or three associate nations who can also compete in the WTC, would make a great difference. Because when you get to rub shoulders with the best of the business, it definitely helps the greater good of the game. And then another thing that you mentioned is the help being extended to teams who are struggling. So, like, West Indies recently have had a lot of downfall in terms of their international cricket. So just the fact that if ICC can touch upon in their organizational structure, so that would help a little bit. And apart from that, I would also like to just ask you guys about the proliferation that we were talking about economically, that about one third of the 55 games that will be played in the T20 World Cup are going to be played in the US. So what are your thoughts about it, and how is it going to spread the economics of the game?
I am very cynical about this, because and I'm better and more knowledgeable people than me have written about this and talked about this, but the whole hosting games in these World T20 games in the US, it's really for the big bulk of viewership that they're going to get from India. It's insane to me that games here, I don't know, Mike, if you have checked this yet, but I'm going to one of the games. I'm going to the India versus USA game in New York in June. The game starts at 10:30 a.m. on Wednesday. That's insane to me. That it's in the middle of, it's not even on a Saturday, it's in the middle of the week in June in New York. You know how hot it is going to be? It's going to be very uncomfortable. But the organizers don't care about that. They don't care about the players who are coming to the stadium. They care about, are people in India going to be able to watch this game, right? That's the only reason. The night game is that, I think it starts at 8:30. The game will end past midnight. That, again, there's no thought given to fans who are here. Now, keep in mind, fans will still go and watch these games. I'm still going to go and watch these games. People will still stay past midnight and watch these games. But the thing is, the priority is being given to viewers, television viewers, and people are going to watch it from, like, countries like India and, you know, the rest of the subcontinent. So the economic focus here is purely on viewership and money. It goes back to that. It's always been the basic. Is it going to grow the game in the US? I'm not so sure. And it may sound cynical, but the focus on growing the game here in the US, it'll have to start from the US cricket team, where players will have to come through. They have to grab attention, you know, in the media with their performances and with their wins. Beyond that, these kind of, like, hosting games, like international games in the US, it'll be great for expatriates, people watching it, fans watching it from other countries. But beyond that, it's not going to do too much, is what I would say.
I completely agree with you, Benny. And I think, so I recently read that they're dropping $30 million to build that New York cricket stadium. And it just blew my mind, because imagine the amount of, you know, facilities at the grassroots level you could bring in $30 million. And I'm not saying, you know, just cricket grounds, but think about, you know, number of coaches you could train, number of schools that could have budget to have cricket in their curriculum. And I think that's where it's lacking. At the end of the day, US in particular is a very school and college driven sport environment. Where, you know, you play for your high school, you go on to play for college, you often get, you know, a paid scholarship if you're an athlete. And all of that leads to a career in sport. All of that leads to interest in sport. And that's where, you know, people develop their passions, whether it's football or basketball or whatever it might be. And unless we tap that market, to Benny's point, having a game at 10 a.m. is going to be still sold out, but it's only because we have enough expats in the country from India, Pakistan, wherever, who are still into the game. And so is it really growing the game past its existing audience? Probably not. And that's where, from a priorities perspective, I feel it's you know, it's a little bit of a shame because there are countries today, associate nations today, which are literally starting GoFundMe pages to sponsor their teams to fly to qualifying events, while, you know, we're spending $30 million on one cricket stadium, which I have no idea if that's ever going to be used in the future. When I moved to the US about 10 years ago, and there was a news about Indianapolis having a new cricket facility, which was going to be state of the art and all of that. And I was very excited because at that point I was also a student at Indiana. So it was not very far from me. And I thought, wow, this is a great step forward. And I've never heard of that facility since, not in the last 5 years. All the cricket happens in North Carolina and Texas. And now we have this new facility and some in Florida as well. And now we have this new facility in New York. Really not sure what that, you know, changes from a grassroots level.
I think administrators have to decide what is more important for them. Do you want to grow the game? Do you want to get new audiences, new viewers, new fans? Or do you want to build on the existing base of the supporters and the viewers that you have primarily from these major traditional cricket test playing nations, right? Like India, Australia, England, and then you have like Pakistan, Sri Lanka, like expatriates or fans from these countries will watch cricket if they, especially living here in the US, they will come and watch the games. Sure. Now, do you want to focus on them and provide them more, you know, even neutral series? You know, maybe you can have India, Pakistan come and play here in the US. Do you want to focus on that? Or are you actually serious about growing the game and getting new audiences? Because the US specifically is a very, very tough market to crack. And a lot of people have tried over the years. You cannot do it, you know, half-assed, essentially. You have to be all in and you have to put in the work. And I think the Major League Cricket in its own way has made an admirable attempt in its first season, but we're still a long way from really getting into the major consciousness of the typical American sports fan.
And I want to, while we're throwing, you know, ideas out here, there's one really left field idea that comes to mind. And that is franchise cricket, but for all formats. And this is something that I've seen, you know, a few people kick around on Twitter, and they've said something like, hey, wouldn't it be amazing if you saw Rashid Khan bowling in the same lineup as Jasprit Bumrah with a red ball? And this is a really fascinating idea to me, because if you had said that 10 years ago, I would laugh at your face. I would say that this is what a joke, and that's not possible. This is not happening. You know, today in the world where somebody as talented as Trent Boult doesn't have a New Zealand contract, more and more cricketers around the world are trying to jump from, you know, MI contract in New York to MI contract in South Africa to MI contract in the IPL. It's possible. I still think it's really outlandish, but you know, it's possible. So curious to get your thoughts on this, and where do you think this has potential, whether this has potential.
The Players Welfare Association would be coming for you, where it's already a treadmill of international cricket, isn't it?
No, Aryan, I really want to hear your thoughts on this, but I'll mention very quickly though, that I love the idea. You know, different formats, like, can you imagine like test playing nation, test players having like a franchise competition where the best test players, they're kind of all mixed up. And I mean, that would be amazing to watch. Well, I don't know if amazing to watch. Imagine Pujara and Smith batting together. it might not be great for the bowlers or for some fans. No, if that has to work though, I'll tell you that international tours, as it stands today, it'll be the death of the international tours. You cannot have it all. Like, something has to give. And for that,
But that's my point right there, and I thought about it as well. But the reason this idea could work is if we expanded the game that way, you're still growing the game. Yeah, you're not growing the game in the traditional sense that, oh yeah, now US is going to be a major cricketing nation. But American cricketers with leagues like this all around the world, 12, you know, not 12, but let's say 8 to 10 months in the year, might get more chances. Right now, the chances are concentrated in a couple of months every year, and even though there are so many leagues, you know, they don't have access to that market. So that's why I still think it's technically a way to grow the game, even though it just, yeah, you're right. It is the death of international cricket, which is what I hold most dearly.
you're basically saying, let's stretch everything thin
Yeah, one
and
of the
force
critical differences
exposure.
I feel is that when the T20 format initiated, right away the IPL began. And so people made the switch from a national sentimental point of view to a franchise point of view. They started becoming loyalists of IPL franchises. But the other two formats have been around for so long that people still prefer to consume it in a nationalistic fervor, right? So I don't think it would be easy for them to get converted and see different players from different teams combining and playing test cricket together. What's your view on that?
That's a great point. I had not thought about that, but it's a good point. I think it's one of those things where I'm in agreement with you. Like, fans like us who have already been fans will always like enjoy an India England series or whatever it might be. But if that starts 10 years down the line, similar to how we have all these kids who are following IPL, and they only care about, you know, their team or their favorite star, there might be, you know, a similar thing happening 10 years down the line where it may not be an immediate thing, but eventually the loyalties rise in a way that, yeah, you're a Mumbai Indians test fan or whatever that team is called, rather than an Indian fan for that matter. So it's definitely going to be a gradual evolution if we go down that path, but yeah, it's just something that fascinates me, and I don't think the boards are gonna be okay with that as well. I know you mentioned the Players Welfare Association, but you know, that would almost mean like, you know, BCCI sort of losing its handle on international cricket. So I don't think that's gonna happen, even if all the franchises are, you know, in close contact with BCCI. Even then, the franchise would have more say than the boards. So that's where it starts to get tricky. And then the other aspect of it is, does that mean we're just like, you know, football or soccer, where, you know, we just play 8 months of club cricket, and then 2 to 3 months, few international friendlies and things like that in the middle. So yeah, it would be an interesting experiment, but yeah, I think the other aspect of it would also be, and this is just me thinking out of the box, but you know, trying to think, is if corporates get involved, they're going to try to maximize, you know, the eyeballs on each game. So they're going to say, let's do a 4-day test, for example. Let's start every test on Thursday, finish on Sunday or Monday, whatever. And that way, you know, people can watch as much as possible. And then day-night tests are on the card. They already happen, but maybe all tests happen day-night, and that also allows for more eyeballs. So it's not just the fact that we would be changing the calendar, but I think we would be changing the format as well, which, you know, would be a significant change from what we are used to today.
And guys, just the fact that we circled around welfare, I just had a question for both of you. That the general manager of ICC, Wasim Khan, said that even though they are trying to extend the opportunities to teams and making sure that the fans consume as much cricket as possible. They have been cognizant of the welfare of players, even though Ben Stokes disagrees vociferously. But it leads me into the debate that we are having earlier about rest and rotation and workload management, because during the COVID times, we saw that India used around 40 to 50 T20I players within a short span, like 6 months. And then also, if you look at how England had that consistency in selection leading up to the 2019 World Cup, where they used 34 players in that four-year window and 12 played in half the games. Whereas if you stack it to the next event, the 2019 to 23 cycle, they played 42 ODIs, used 44 players, and only 8 of them featured in at least half. And that culminated in their performance. It was a reflection of how they didn't have that consistency of selection. So I would just like to open the floor for you guys. What are your views on the consistency in selection vis-a-vis the rest and rotation workload management, given the proliferation of cricket and the growing number of games?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's any doubt that the quality of cricket will dip. You know, like, for example, when, to your point, when COVID happened and Shikhar Dhawan was leading a T20 side in Sri Lanka, as an example, that even though they're fabulous cricketers, you know, there's no doubt about it, they're obviously among the top, let's say, 50 players that India has. And that by itself is a pretty high bar. Even then, like, there's little doubt that it's not the same as the top 15, you know, playing in a World Cup. So the quality does dip a little bit when you get as much cricket. There's injuries, to your point, workload management is something that needs to be considered. Recently, there were conversations in Pakistan cricket around the same when, you know, somebody like Naseem Shah was just gone out of the World Cup, and it was a big blow to them. So it's a valid concern, but I think that's where you kind of have to draw the line and say, yeah, the quality is going to dip in the short term. But if we are building more quality cricketers around the world, maybe it's going to eventually increase. So again, it's sort of that long-term view that, you know, obviously utopian view that I'm trying to envision, where I'm trying to think that, hey, sure, you have to take a short-term loss to kind of, you know, show it on your balance sheet 5 years down the line or something.
Here's what I will say, and this is my personal experience/observation. Once upon a time, I used to religiously follow every cricket game, like a international game. I'm talking about early 2000s, right? Not just India, Australia, South Africa, West Indies. If I saw on TV like Star Sports playing some obscure, showing some obscure county cricket game, I'll sit and watch it. I would sit and watch it. Even though I don't know the players, I just wanting to watch some sort of cricketing action. Fast forward 20 years, there's literally cricket happening every day today, and different formats, but I don't have that same interest anymore. In fact, I don't even watch every India game anymore. I'll probably check in on the scores. And I think one of the main reasons is I don't recognize some of, not necessarily I don't recognize the players, because obviously a lot of them feature in the IPL and stuff. But nowadays, when they say, oh, India is playing Sri Lanka, almost all of the time, they never send a full strength team, right? Yep. They'll send essentially, in years past, you would have essentially the India senior team, and then you would have India A team, right? Now, essentially, the India players who would normally play in the A team are playing for the senior team. And it was so comical in the last 2 years, like it felt like Rohit Sharma and Virat Kohli were not available for like 90% of the time in many of the limited overs games because they were all being rested. And then this is even like leaving aside the players who were injured. You had players who for years they would have to toil on the domestic circuit and then play some A tours and then they would get a chance. Now they're getting like multiple opportunities at the senior level. So as a fan, it's like every series has a different set of players or players who are, you know, are not going to be permanent. They're just there for that particular series and then they're going to go. That sense of attachment is not there anymore for me as a fan. And I don't follow games as religiously. And it's also the stage of life I'm in. You know, before I was younger, had more time to kill. Now I am a family man. I have obligations. I have work stuff. So the game or the administrators will have to take a look and see what kind of fans they want, right? Like even like the BCCI, when they select their teams or when they agree to these schedules, it's like, what kind of fans do we want to be following this? Do we just want people to just watch whatever we throw at them, or do we make it more, you know, controlled? Honestly, as a fan, I'm prepared to watch less cricket. I'm prepared to watch the Indian team in action for only like four times a year, like four tours or four tournaments a year, if that means they always have the best players in the squad. If they're playing every month and they just send whoever is available, whoever can hold a bat and ball, I'm not interested. I'm not going to watch that game. I think there was this T20 series right after that traumatic World Cup final, right? It was the following week. India and Australia were playing this T20 series. I didn't follow it. I checked the scores and I think I saw the highlights of maybe one or two games, but my heart wasn't in it. And so that's where we are at. I mean, sure, you could, you know, try to do all the rest and rotation, but at the end of the day, fans are not going to be invested in it 100% of the time. And is that going to serve the long term? In the long term, is it actually going to be helpful for the administrators? Because you're losing out on passionate fans. And in fact, you're getting burnt out fans. Fans are just like so burned out by the constant cricket and all these different competitions. And you're just like, well, I'll just check the score later when I get a chance. So.
Yeah, Benny. Actually, I have two branches of conversation from what you said. You touched on to a great point about attachment to the game. And one of the recent trends that has been emerging is that in some competitions, even the integrity is being compromised because in the franchise competitions, it is not in the best interest of some of the players that their team goes on to the knockout stages and actually goes on to win the competition. So that is one of the things that dents the allegiance that fans have with the game. And secondly, when you talk about the hemorrhaging of cricket, that's actually taking a toll on the fans. It's also taking a toll on the journalists because when I see an IPL with so many games, I have to cherry-pick which games I'm going to cover because otherwise I'm not going to be able to go log on to my TV at 8 o'clock. I want to go with a clean slate where I've not consumed too much cricket and I'm able to, regal observations. I'm able to pick up those little nuances that I can, translate into my future. Otherwise, the thing that we discussed at the start of the podcast, all the games blending into one another, it, muddles your mind up. So, yeah, this is something that I do. I nitpick which games I'm going to watch, and that helps me keep my observations very fresh.
And I think that's kind of sad that we have to do that. We're forced to do that, right? Like once upon a time, I would be so excited. I would know, oh, India's playing South Africa next week. So make sure my schedule is clear, sit down and watch the games, plan my work around it. Now it's like it's always in the background. Sometimes I don't follow it the entire day. I'll just read like a report after the game is done. And I'm like, this is not the game that I grew up loving. Not the game. And I don't want to sound like this old, you know, kind of like a boomer version of a cricket fan, but I mean, it's kind of sad that this is how it is. And too much of a good thing isn't always great. And so I don't know if there's going to be any real world changes, just because the fact of the matter is T20 cricket, T20 franchises are here to stay. All these tournaments are here to stay. So everything else has to adjust accordingly. And so I don't know. I feel cricket fandom is going to change. The kind of cricket
Yeah.
fans are going to change in the coming years. You will have IPL only fans, right? People who watch the IPL and then the rest of the year they don't care about international cricket. Or if they do, they'll be like, oh, my CSK player is doing well. I wonder if you'll be informed for the next season. You know, like that's the kind of discussion. And then there are people
Yeah.
who will tune out when the IPL starts. They're like, I don't care. This is not cricket for me. And that's just going to be the new landscape.
And the predicament is that there's obviously a saturation happening, but on top of that, you are overdoing the innovation. For example, you're bringing the impact player rule, so it's making the game even more one-dimensional, killing the romanticism and thrill that a low-scoring humdinger can have. So it's a double whammy, if you see.
In fact, that I was just thinking about it the other day, that it's unfair to compare these T20 games to any other T20 game, because, I mean, in international T20s, you don't have the impact player. So if you talk about, oh, this team scored 287, well, there's an asterisk next to it. They could do that because they had this, they have the freedom to go for it. In other traditional T20 games without the impact player rule, guess what? They have to be more cautious. They have to be more conservative. So you cannot, even when you say, oh, this is the highest score in IPL, well, previous IPL editions without the impact player rule, who knows? They could have gone for that score. They just couldn't. So it's just like, I don't know. Too much innovation for the purpose of entertainment is one thing, but then it's not cricket, you know, if it makes any sense. And I think Ashwin, Ravichandran Ashwin mentioned it like earlier, that IPL is not necessarily cricket. It's entertainment first, the cricket is secondary. So, and I think that's a good way of looking at it.
I think just to close off, I think a couple of thoughts that have come to mind is one, it's a very good point about the fans that we are trying to get. So, for example, you know, everybody's read about, or at least all the sports nerds have read about, like Moneyball in baseball, and one of the after effects of that was that the game became very analytical. It became very numbers based. And while that was great from like an efficiency perspective, you know, teams, coaches, managers, analysts were able to find the right talent, make, you know, compete with, you know, even clubs or franchises which had a lot more money. It turned off a lot of general fans who just enjoyed watching baseball. It turned off a lot of fans who were, you know, not as much into the data, not as much into all of that. And so now you have sort of two sets of fans, one who just enjoy going to the stadium, having a beer, you know, having a hot dog, and just enjoy the environment. And two, the others who are very analytical about it. There's a, you know, very few in that middle ground, you know, who are watching, but, you know, watching intently, but not following as closely. And, you know, so that's sort of a byproduct of the approach that happened in baseball, as an example. So it's a very good point that we need to also think about the fans and what kind of fans we attract. If the idea is to attract just, you know, families and kids and all of that, absolutely T20, the 100, all of this is great because it's exactly for that. But if you're also trying to retain some of our core fans and the traditional thought processes, then yeah, there's got to be a balance. And the other thing that comes to mind is I think change is always going to be there, right? So obviously we didn't have T20s before. Now we have T20s. At one point of time, we didn't have colorball cricket, colored clothes crickets. And now we have limited overs cricket, which is so well established. So change is always going to be there. And the impact player rule, for example, I don't necessarily know that I'm against it. I think the reason I think it's still interesting is it kind of changes the game to almost like a 12 versus 12 game rather than an 11 versus 11 game. So that's where it makes it interesting. So there's, but none of that matters if the pitch does not support. So to my point, like earlier where I said all the pitches are exactly the same and really flat, even if they kept the surfaces at each venue distinct, it would still be very interesting because to Aryan's point, we would know, hey, this game's at Lucknow. This is going to be a tight, low scoring one. And you would tune in a different set of fans than, let's say, somebody tuning into Bangalore. So at least having that variety is what makes cricket rich. And that's where, like, you know, traditionally in Indian test cricket, for that matter, it's been such, you know, so good to watch because you go to a Ranchi and there's black soil and the pitch acts completely different. Somebody as experienced as Ashwin has to say, I had to rethink how I bowl. So that's sort of, you know, that's how you keep cricket interesting for all fans. And there's not a one size fits all answer because at the end of the day, like, you know, a lot of people say, oh yeah, South African 20 was popular, is popular, had a really good, they've had a really good two seasons because the IPL franchises bought it and because all these important players play in it and all of that. And that's partly true. But the other aspect that they've done a really good job of is They've kept the tournament small. They didn't try to do a 2 months long IPL because they understand the market in that country is smaller. They've marketed it with, you know, all these things where if you take a catch in the crowd, you get an award, you know, things like that, which motivate people to come out and make it a great experience. And so they've found a niche within the franchise market to make it work in South Africa. And I think that's where we need to go. We need to find two or three different variations of these products that work in different markets across the world.
And Mayank, one of the things that I've observed from a fan experience is that the impact player rule has taken away the element of closing out games, where teams would earlier pick two or three wickets in the power play and then they would just keep their feet on the throat of the opposition and not let a comeback happen. But now you have a Rovman Powell walking at number 8 and number 7. So it just elongated the batting order so much that there's no room for tail-enders coming into a T20 inning anymore.
I mean, just to give you an indication, as we are recording this, right, the IPL game that's going on right now, KKR versus Punjab Kings, KKR scored 262. First of all, that's an insane total.
Run of the mill nowadays.
But here's the thing. 9.9 times out of 10, you would say that should be like once in a generation kind of total. And you can't chase that. Punjab Kings in 12 overs have scored 173 for one. They need 89 of 48. And it doesn't even feel like that's anything special because we have seen it so often already this season. It's gotten to the point where when a batter scores a six, the commentators aren't excited. They're just like, oh, the batsman has swung and it's another six to the team. There's no excitement. There's no like, oh, this is a special thing, right? The fact that a team can score 173 runs in 12 overs and they're still kind of not considered favorites, that's the state of the game. And I think, I don't know if that's a good change, even given how the impact player rule has made it like 12 versus 12. Like, it hasn't made it any more special for me. And my brain is just now dulled to it. Now, if a team scores in 12 overs, if they score like 100, I feel like they're too slow. You know, that's just how it has changed the game.
It's become a highlights package for 3.5 hours.
Exactly.
Yeah, and, before gone are the days when 270 used to be a competitive score in an ODI game.
Exactly.
That's true.
Exactly. Now 270 in T20 seems like, oh wait, they're short by 15 runs.
Yeah, but I love the point Mayank made about having distinct characteristics of pitches, because that is one efficient way you can offset the advantage that impact player gives a team.
But
I don't know why they're not doing it often, because India, obviously, you have the most experienced curators and it's obviously their beck and call. They can do it. I love the games at Ikana and some of the games at Eden where there was a lot of bounce and initially there was a bit of grass cover on the surface. I think we need to see more sporting surfaces in IPL for sure.
No, I agree. I mean, people complain. I've seen on social media, people complain about, you know, the games in Chennai. Because, you know, they're more spin friendly. It becomes a battle of attrition. It's more for seasoned cricket watchers. It's fun, right, to watch that kind of contest between bat and ball. But in general, most fans, IPL fans, don't enjoy that because they're not seeing the fours and sixes as regularly as they're used to. And then they start criticizing the groundsman, saying, what kind of ground is this? We need more grounds like Bangalore and, you know, Mumbai and all of that. And I'm like, ultimately, the IPL, the organizers and the curators, they give what people are wanting for. You know, this is what, you know, the majority of fans want now. And that's why we don't have these pitch conditions that are suitable for even contest. They see, okay, people love the fours and sixes. Let's give them as flat a ground as they can get. And, you know, on one hand, cricket should be a game for everyone. You know, there's a little bit of everything. If you want like good contests, you know, you can have like the tests and even the ODIs to a large extent. But if you just want, you know, there's a lot of fans who just want to see batsmen smacking every ball out of the ground. And that's where, you know, you have something like the IPL. So ultimately, at the end of the day, cricket has something for everyone. And I guess if you want to put an optimistic spin on it, that's one way of looking at it.
Yeah. But even for the casual fan, there has to be a point of saturation, right? Because if the every game follows a similar template, you are going to get fed up of it at one point. Because if you go to Niagara Falls 7 times, 8th time, you will also be like, it's only waterfalling, right?
Yeah, I've seen.
So the charm
That's
will
a
be
great.
lost.
Agreed, agreed, absolutely. And that's again, it's a sad thing because we have taken it for granted, right? When Yuvraj Singh hit that 36 runs in one over, and then even against England, he's not sorry, England, Australia in that same 2017-20 World Cup, he smacked them around. At that time, it was such a big deal, and it was like, oh, even Suresh Raina, when he scored that 87 off 25 many years ago in the IPL, it was like, this is incredible. Now every game someone is doing the same thing. They're just repeating it again and again. It is not as special anymore. And you're very accurate about the saturation point. So how did this all translate to the FTP and the structure of the international cricket? I think we barely scratched the surface, and I think this needs to be a longer discussion, but I think the administrators need to figure out how to balance everything out. I think there are a lot of Test cricket fans out there. There are a lot of ODI fans out there. Just find a way to balance it. Give a little bit of everything to everyone and don't just concentrate on just one format and, just like one tournament. Let's be more generous with it. And I think that's the only thing that practically can be done because I don't think there's going to be any revolutionary changes to the structure and formats of the game. So I think that's where we're at. Well, on that note, I want to thank Aryan for joining us today. Aryan, I know we probably could have gone on and on, but I felt like half the time you were ranting about the modern state of the game, which is fine because at the end of the day, we're talking cricket. There's always scope for improvement in the way the game is governed, in the way the game, the games are structured and scheduled and all of that. And we as cricket fans, and even like journalists in your case, you have the ability to articulate all of this, and have people read it and formulate their own ideas on how they can improve stuff. So more power to you and to what you're doing, and I think we'll probably have to have another episode just to kind of flesh these out further. I think we just scratched the surface, as I mentioned earlier. But once again, Aryan, thank you so much. And for listeners, you can listen to Aryan at Cricket Beyond Borders. It's Aryan's podcast that he hosts with two other hosts, and you can also find his writings at Gorilla Cricket. You can follow him on Twitter at I am Aryan Surana. Yes, Aryan, thank you so much for your time today.
Most welcome, guys, and I love talking to you guys. And it's been liberating also to talk about cricket in an informal setting because, as writers, as analysts, as journalists, we are always very prim and proper, analytical in our
Yes.
viewpoints. So it's just nice to cut loose at some point.
No, we don't do prim and proper here. So I'm glad you were able to cut loose today. But Mayank, thanks for your time as well. And to our listeners, please do check out our other episodes if you haven't, and do follow us on your social media feeds. But otherwise, thank you for listening, and we hope you stay tuned for more episodes. Thank you for listening to an episode of The Last Wicket. Do check out other episodes on your podcast app of choice or at thelastwicket.com. This podcast is a Cricket Guys production featuring your hosts, Benny and Mayank. And if you enjoyed this podcast, do let a friend know, rate and subscribe on your platform of choice, follow us on your social media feeds, and leave us a voice message if you would like to share your thoughts with us. Thank you again for listening. And from all of us here at The Last Wicket, stay safe, stay healthy.